podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is the weekend, and it's John Gibbons hosting this week, and I'm joined by Philippa Smallwood, by Paul Lynette, and by Mike Kearney to talk about everything going on in the world of Liverpool FC this week. So we've obviously got a game to reflect on from last night, and obviously a Premier League game to look forward to as well. We've also got two inserts as ever. Andy Heaton's been out to speak to Michael Stokes, who's a young musician here in Liverpool, and there's also Neil Atkinson, who spoke to the makers of the We Are Geordies film. That's coming up in part two, and then obviously we've got lots about the Fulham game. But before all that, Liverpool drew a Champions League game, 1-1. For the dead rubber, Philippa, there wasn't half a made a lot of noise.
It was crazy. It was one of those, as I was watching it, you just, before the game even started, you're thinking, there's nothing riding on it. You know, just enjoy the game, have a nice relaxed evening, see a few of the kids playing and you know, happy days. And then as the match goes on and decisions are being made by officials, you've no idea what's going on, and you end up like really wound up by it all. And for a game that's like basically a dead rubber, like you say, it was just a really strange feeling. I thought, you know, it was pretty much how I expected from us, really. You know, we kind of playing in second gear all game. You know, I thought the youngsters did well, but apart from that, you know, there was a lot of players who you felt was trying to make sure that they didn't get injured, basically. You know, Fabinho played really well in the first half, but out of all the senior pros, I would say he's probably the only one that really shone for us last night.
Yeah, it was funny, Paul. It did show that no matter how little football matters, football will always matter lots to all of us. You know, we could do anything. It doesn't really matter. Send the kids, get beat as soon as the game starts. We're all just as rabid as ever.
I mean, the intensity of the opening, of seeing a goal in under a minute, you know, just raised our pulses the whole game through. And then we just wanted more of that. And we didn't get it. And it was, you know, as Philip was saying, the whole situation with ref decisions, I mean, it just seemed, yet again, that we were just like getting the short end of the stick, and it just didn't seem fair. But yeah, you just get too excited over a game that shouldn't matter too much, but of course it matters because it's Liverpool.
Yeah, what did you make of the team selection, Mike? Because there's obviously a lot of conversations, not least at the Anfield, that we're always banging on about what kind of team that we would travel over. There was some suggestion that all the senior pros won't even get on the plane, and then obviously a few did and a few started and a few more sort of came off the bench. What did you make of the team, and what do you think Jürgen was trying to do with it?
To be honest, I was sort of expecting it not to be as weak as everyone was planning for, because you know, you've got to submit your squad to the UEFA, haven't you, at the start of the season, and you get to submit again before the next round. So, you know, with that squad we've submitted, there's obviously limits to how many you can have, and obviously with all the injuries we've got, there's going to be some people involved somewhere along the lines. I was pleased to see that Robertson, Henderson, Wijnaldum all just sat on the bench. I thought, well, that'll be it, give them a night off maybe. And then little, like, Henderson comes on, Robertson comes on. You're like, hang on a minute, lad. We've got a game here on Sunday, you know. But I suppose I was quite shocked at Fabinho. But again, I sort of talked myself around a bit, because we've got injuries. That's the place we've got injuries. So I was expecting him to do exactly what he did, really get 45 minutes. And Cometio, you know, came on. And as much as he looked a little bit panicky now and again, I think he passed one straight out for the corner when it was just a simple back pass sort of thing. But that was mainly the only blemish for him, really. He thought he did well otherwise. And they had Williams has played a bit, but we still need to have professionals in and around these kids at the minute to help them through games. You know, Keller has 22 now, I think, but still relatively inexperienced in terms of being a first-team goalkeeper for Liverpool Football Club. So I suppose, I don't know, Jürgen, what is in the thoughts here, but I think he was just wanted to start the game and not lose a foot in it dead quick and be down if we were too inexperienced. So I can sort of see why, you know, and we've got the whole injury thing again with Trent. He needs minutes. We've got a big games coming up a week's time, you know, from last night as we played the biggest one. You want him to get 90 in, so he's got minutes in the bank. He'll probably get some more on Sunday, whether that's a start or not, we don't know yet. But, you know, I wasn't too... It was mainly Salah and Fabinho. Everyone was a bit like, well, what's he doing? and then it turns out being a 100-minute match, basically, and quite physical. Jota got booted a few times. You know, it's sort of, you know, there's lots of to be made, especially with Jürgen Klopp speaking about the substitutions, the schedule, and we are Wednesday, Saturday again, Saturday 12:30 again next week. So people, so it's Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, aren't we? And you know, people will now have this stick to try and beat him with next week, when he'll just turn around and say, "Well, what did you want me to do? If I'd have sent the under-16s, you'd have kicked off. If I'd have said so, it's one of them. I'm sort of fine with it. It was a dead rubber. It was 1-1. We probably should have won, even though we weren't like on our sparkling best. I think we were still good enough to have won. And I was just, you know, ultimately we've got through it. As far as we know, no injuries and no Trent's got minutes in the bank. Clinton Clarkson played really well. Kometi has made his debut. Williams played really well again. So I'm happy. Basically, we were through anyway, weren't we? And the main thing was to not get beat, because you don't want to go and lose games, and to avoid injuries.
To sort of stick up for Jürgen a bit on the whole idea of, you know, because I take Mike's point, Philippa, that he's, you know, he's made a lot of noise about the number of games, so that he has an opportunity to rest everyone and doesn't take it. But isn't the point that he's trying to make that he hasn't had a choice and it's taken away from him? And there's lads in our squad who could play every day, and there's other lads like Joel Matip who needs a week between games, and then there's lots of others who are sort of in between. And I think where his problem is that, you know, he's had to keep asking all the same ones to go again and again and again and again and again. And he's not saying that none of them, you know, can't play in one particular game. He's just saying that, well, his hand's being forced. And I think last night you saw that, you know, there's for a few of them, you know, it was nice to give them a game. You know, Jota doesn't play the weekend, so he comes in. You know, Trent, you know, was a good start for him. I was a little bit surprised to see Salah get so much, but maybe the sports guys are looking at him and thinking, do you know what, he's okay, he's good to go. And they're analysing each of these players individually, aren't they, and seeing what they can do individually. And I think obviously for some of them, they've just had to go a little bit closer or a little bit further to the edge than what they've wanted to this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Salah for me is I think he's probably the smartest out of all of our forwards at being able to limit the effort that he puts in. And I don't mean that as a, you know, disparaging on him. I mean, as in he's really clever in the runs that he makes and when he makes them. I think, you know, if you play somebody like Mane, he basically is up and down constantly throughout the whole of the game. So I don't think he's as smart limiting his effort, should we say, at the right moments. But I think you're right. I think I don't really understand all of this that, you know, because he only made two substitutions, I think, last week. And then this week he's played some first teamers, and people are saying he can't now complain about the five substitution thing. That's not the point. The point is that at the weekend against Fulham, for example, he could maybe start the likes of Trent and take him off after 60 minutes if we're winning the game comfortably. And he hasn't got that option because he's only got three substitutions that he can make. So if he gets injuries later on in the game, he's having to hold at least one substitution back. Whereas if he's got the five, he can make his three normal substitutions in order to hold, you know, take a player off so that they're not getting towards their limit, and then still have two there for if there's any injuries later on. I just find it strange that people are kind of using it as a stick to beat him with. You know, to make eight changes last night, I think is more than acceptable. I think, you know, maybe there was a bit of a surprise there that Fabinho started. But at the end of the day, if you're asking, you know, two really inexperienced lads to basically go in there and play a full 90 minutes of a Champions League game against, I think they were the Danish champions, weren't they? So I just think it's a lot to ask of the young players, and I think it's something that Klopp is really wary of, not destroying young lads' careers before they've even begun. You know, if those two lads play together last night and we concede three or four goals and we end up getting beat and everybody's going, well, why is he even starting them? It's just not fair on them. You know, we may well need them in the second half of the season, depending on what happens and if we get other injuries, and you don't want those sorts of players being absolutely down on the confidence, you know, if you do need them later on. So I think he probably got the balance just about right. You know, maybe I would have only started one of Jota or Salah. But again, you know, you have to give the young players the opportunity of being able to compete in a game like that. And you do need experienced lads out there who can guide them through a game. You know, Leighton Clarkson for me was brilliant in the midfield. And if you was to ask me out of the three midfielders who was the more experienced, I would have said it was him. You know, I thought he had a really outstanding game. But if you have him alongside two other inexperienced players, then maybe you don't see as much of him and he doesn't shine as much as he did do last night. I just think that there is a balance there to be had and maybe he did get it right last night.
I mean, Philippa makes a really good point there, Paul, about the young players who are picked and what's better for them. And that's something that Jürgen Klopp will be bearing in mind as well. Is it, okay, if he wants to start Leighton Clarkson and if he thinks as highly of Leighton Clarkson as what he says he does, comparing him to unnamed mystery German internationals, that he would go quite... So there was some fun speculation on who that was last night. I'm going for Lothar Matthäus, but, you know, that's just guessing. But if he thinks that highly of him, then if he's going to throw him in his first game, he wants him there. Experience a long time, excite him, but also with really good lads to pass to and lads who are going to make these runs. And you saw him really enjoying himself, especially first half, you know, having someone like Keita alongside of him who wasn't that eye-catching in terms of what he did. But when you see, you know, you analyse him after the game, you always see what a shift he puts in, and he must be, you know, a nice guy to play alongside, certainly in terms of, you know, his efforts for the team. And you know, the runs of Jota and Salah, you know, he was really enjoying them. And you don't maybe get that performance from him if he's got someone like a Jake Kane alongside him instead, or you're throwing in one of the youngsters, you know, up top.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the balance was really good because you can't throw on an entire youth team and then let them just run riot on it. You've got to have the sense in the intelligence of the more mature players alongside them. It just doesn't work otherwise. I think we've seen that in the past where we've really not invested in a strong enough team, and then the consequence has been that those players that have taken part in that do get a hammering from our fans and in the media. It's not good for them. Mm. Whereas as a consequence of last night, you saw Trent get his first armband.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you saw a whole load of young players have a good game on balance. It wasn't a brilliant game, but like Philippa says, we held off the Danish champions. We sprung a trap right at the beginning, got a goal off the bounce, and the whole thing worked quite well. It still reflected the DNA of a Klopp team in terms of how the players pressed, how they performed, the passes that were taking place. To see Trent back was really good. He's not fully there yet, clearly, but I think to try and argue that, oh, we should just safeguard the players at all costs, you've got to risk them sometimes anyway. And if you don't give them the playing time anyway, they're not going to come back from injury, such as Trent is, etc. So it is all about balance. I'm not going to call Klopp right or wrong on it. You know, we got a result out of it. We didn't get any significant injuries by the looks of things, so I'm happy.
Yeah, and we go through as well, Mike, and that's, you know, obviously the most important thing, and we've got ties to look forward to, you've got to say, in terms of the next leg, we know who's gone through. There's a few belters in there, so a few that maybe I'd be a little bit gutted if we don't get to travel to. I've got my eye on Mönchengladbach. I'll be honest, Mike, I don't know if you've picked anything yet, or are you just going to wait and see?
I'm all in for Mönchengladbach. I think we played them in the European final years ago, so it ties in a little bit, doesn't it? So be nice, and they, you know, they've been out of the Champions League for a while, so be nice to have them again, just to sort of have history repeating itself. I know it's only a last 16, but yeah, I don't fear anyone really. I mean, fully fit, we're better than most teams in the world, proven by actually being, you know, the best in the world as we speak still. So yeah, you know, even now with the injuries we've got, we're joint top of our league, as you know, qualified through the Champions League group relatively easy. You know, we could have done it even easier, really, the week before. If we'd got a result against Atalanta at home, didn't happen. But, you know, we still managed to go out and beat a very good team in Ajax the week later. So there's lots of positives to take in, out of this extraordinary season at the minute with, you know, as I say, all the things that we seem to be, we have going against us. We're still, it's this mentality that, you know, it's used a lot, isn't it? You know, mentality monsters, but we just keep going and you know, everyone can throw everything at us and see what sticks, and we just keep going and going. And I think if you're one of them teams, if you put it this way, Mönchengladbach don't want us. So a lot of them teams really don't want us. Barcelona are scarred by what happened to them. If we can get them, they'll be like, well, we'll avoid them. We can, you know, let's not have it overly confident. Like they'll be saying, look, we can exploit these weaknesses, and they'll be thinking themselves up as, you know, Liverpool aren't this unbreakable machine. But, you know, we are one of the teams that you wouldn't want even in the situation we find ourselves in. And, you know, once February rolls around, hopefully Thiago back in again, and a lot of our players come through the next couple of months. You know, we seem to be one of the ones that I'm even most capable to build, like, to be able to deal with it, because we've been doing 3 games a week in Champions League for a couple of seasons now, and at the intensity we've been doing them at as well, there's no sign of drop off from us, and we're just a winning machine at the moment. So if I'm them, I don't want us, and I definitely want a trip, hopefully to one of the better teams. Maybe if we get one of them, that's fine. But, you know, there's Porto in there again as well. We always seem to get Porto, don't we? Porto's a good sign. We had to win the European Cup or the league, so bring them on.
I mean, we have defo played Porto. I can confirm. I've watched us feeling like a lot against Porto. And just to finish up on the game, and to finish up on the VAR stuff, Philip, and you know, we've done well to largely avoid it, really. I just think it'd help a lot if they told us what was going on. Like, to find out 15 minutes after the offside that maybe he was, you know, which would help a lot. And I used to think it was hard on the ground, but at least on telly, you know what's going on. Apparently, that's gone out the window now as well.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't understand when they're having a conversation, the officials, obviously they're talking to the referee and they're saying, look, we're looking at this, you know, and then they're probably saying, right, he's onside, we've checked that, and now we're moving on and we're having a look and seeing if it was a penalty. If we were hearing that, we would actually understand the decisions that are being made and, you know, what part of the process they're up to. But because we don't get to hear any of it, even like the commentators last night didn't have a clue what was going on, and they're just looking at it and saying, well, he's offside, you can see he's offside. And then they move on and they're like, why are they even looking at this? I don't understand why they're looking at a foul when he looks like he's offside. So, I mean, the angle obviously what didn't help last night. And then the goal at the end, Mane's header, that you can't actually, for me anyway, you can't actually tell if it's Mane's hand or if it's the defender's hand that it comes off. So I don't understand in that situation how you can therefore chalk off the goal. But it, again, if you could hear what was going on and maybe see the camera angles that they were looking at, you would actually agree with the decision. And that's part of fans' frustration, is you feel like there's been an injustice, and we could be completely wrong on that. As was proved with the penalty decision, we spend 15 minutes going mad about it and going, what the hell are they talking about, or what are they doing here? And if we just knew what had happened at the time, we'd have all been okay with it and been right, we move on to the next thing now, let's up our game. But instead, we're spending 15 minutes just chewing on something that maybe we didn't need to.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Minamino as well. But he must feel like he just can't catch a break at the moment. Winning goal in the Champions League game and chalked off. But never mind, I'm sure he'll have his moment. I'm keeping the faith in Taki. Okay, we're going to have a little break now in our virtual studio. And no break for you. You've got Neil and Andy doing some inserts. But then we're all going to be back talking about Fulham. So stick with us. Hope you enjoy.
I'm joined by the directors of We Are The Geordies, James DeMarco and Zara Zamorodian. I had a good run-up at that, Zara. I hope I did it well enough. But you can review me afterwards, and we'll go from there. They've produced this film, We Are The Geordies, which follows Newcastle United supporters across the course of the 16-17 season when they were in the Championship. It is available to be purchased at wearethegeordies.com. It is also a frankly, a love letter to a number of different things, to the notion of football support, to the city of Newcastle, to the way people devote their lives, and ever so slightly to Rafa Benitez. We'll come to Rafa Benitez at the end. James and Zara will instead start with Newcastle. You're both Newcastle supporters. You both love the club. And you found 11 fascinating people to follow over the course of a 46-game season, Zara.
And a cup run. We made it to the Rafa got us to the quarterfinal of the League Cup that year, although some people seem to have written that out of history. And it doesn't fit in the film, but we did cover it. Yeah. 46 games.
46 games and all these fascinating people, James. And this is, you know, for me, you've moved over from the US, having fallen in love with the city of Newcastle and the football club that's attached to it. You find yourself through this journey. You obviously sort of these people volunteer, you work with them. It seems clearer and clearer to me that you very much commit to their stories wholeheartedly.
Yeah, most certainly. It was kind of a situation where this was our first documentary of this nature, like a feature documentary. So a lot of it was like learning curve for us. So when we spent the time, it was a lot of logistics that had to be sorted out, mm-hmm. How we would meet them at the matches, who we would follow. So we end up having, and we still have it now right in front of me, there's a huge board that goes across the room with each game and post-its on there of who we're going to see. And it's insane. And we haven't taken it down. I think it's just to remind us of all the work we put in over the years on this. But it's quite miraculous, really, when you think about it. But it does. We really didn't know what we were going to get following fans around, because you don't know if somebody's not going to come across the right way. Or we picked 11 in the end. We had a few of them that ended up not making the cut. But for the most part, because we were on a ticking clock from the time that Zara came up with the idea till the time we began filming was only 2 months. So we would never had that much time for pre-production, so it was always flying by the seat of our pants, more or less, really.
Well, you used to say we're winging a prayer. Productions, yeah. I'm winging your prayer, yeah. Or vice versa.
And so it was like, you know, it was amazing. It was amazing to do it, but looking back on it, I don't know if I would have done it again if I knew what we went through. Because, it killed us, and we have a disabled son. We're married, so and we have a disabled son whom Zara's mother was looking after a lot of the times. And then when she got unwell, we had to figure out what we were going
to
do with
Luke. He came with us to away.
So he came with us to like Aston Villa. And some, so we're like outside a pub with a million people like going mental, and there's little Luca there. So we had him, and then
he had McDonald's on the way there and McDonald's, yeah, on the way back.
Well, that's living all right.
So like one thing, when he grows up, he'll never forget his time of having the McDonald's in Rotherham. Like he can look forward to that day. But in the end, it ended that we had to find out we couldn't take him. So it was a lot of times it ended up being Zara going a sound with a cameraman and me going as camera with a sound person.
But just on that all the way through, you know, the realities of micro budget filmmaking are that, you know, there's a lot of make do amend Zara around it. But it's interesting, you know, you've got a couple of different AOPs, you've got different bits and pieces of people having to just sort of muck in all the way through, and then you're telling the different stories. It is this with those people as well. It is a huge logistical undertaking when you're doing it on, as I say, on a micro budget. It is down to almost who's around, who's available, who, yeah, wants to do it. And that's an exciting thing in that everyone who's there, present, everyone who's working on the project, they're opting in.
Yeah, exactly. And that was really one of the most important things to us. We kind of made a rule at the beginning that we wouldn't wait for anybody. So nobody got a call back. You know, you're either in, or we just didn't have time to chase people. Yep. Like had this little, our little hoo-ha happened on the film, it would have been right, move on to the next one now.
No, I think that's a way to work, but it's also a way to get the results that you needed to on this, because when you say before about winging a prayer, well, there's no other way to do it, because football matches, and we have this all the time at the Anfield Wrap, football matches happen at the time they're going to happen at. If people aren't there, if things aren't right, if things aren't ready, well, the football match isn't going to move, so no one else is going to move, and you've got to cut your cloth.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was some classic, there was one of the matches we were supposed to meet you've seen the film, so you know there's that like key sequence around the QPR match, which was the closing of the January transfer window, and it's intercut with like the match footage, the press conference with Rafa, and also us interviewing our fans at a couple of matches around that time. And we'd arranged to meet all of our fans, and then one of them we thought didn't turn up. And all the way through, James and I are cursing this fan going, I can't believe, you know, they've stood us up. It's the most important, blah, 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 blah. Then later on, we're reviewing the footage and we actually see that fan walking along the background of the interview that we were conducting, looking for us, but just not seeing us in amongst the crowd. So, you know, we're kind of cursing them for not being there, but we just didn't hook up. They're there walking along the back of the shot.
A lot of this is, I mean, firstly, you end up, can I ask if you would have done it? You have the idea, Zara. Would you have done it in the season that you weren't, if you'd have been in the Premier League? Was the idea just the idea regardless and it happened to hit the 46 games, the Championship season? Or was the Championship and the idea of it being different, greater variation in the number of places, frankly, and I don't mean this crudely, a greater chance of getting more victories in and a journey having an uplifting ending? Did all of that, was that part of it, or was the decision made, no, you would have done it anyway, having had the idea?
It was kind of actually neither of those things. The idea was following Newcastle United fans, and then there was a Liverpool fan who I was talking to about the project at like a filmmaking thing, and he is a TV writer, and he said, oh yeah, it would be amazing to actually do a documentary following football fans. And we were kind of fangirling about Rafa. And they said, but you have to do it this season because you're in the Championship and you've got somebody who was at Madrid and now they're with you. Mm. And it's like the burnabout to Barnsley, the burnabout to Burton Albion. That's just so saleable. And I'm like, here, man, the football season starts in 2 months. There's no way we're going to be able to turn this round. But we kind of did. Like 2 months the day after that conversation, we were interviewing Rafa.
That's an astonishing thing, James. And within that as well, on the 11 that you follow, the 11 supporters that you get right the way through, there's a hugely disparate set of identities. And this is always something, you know, I'm obsessed with identity within football now, that there's the idea that people come with these hugely sort of different backgrounds in terms of, you know, gender, race, you name it. You yourself have come over from the United States. That all this stuff is ongoing within a football crowd, but then everyone comes together to focus on the one thing for 90 minutes. Was that something you were looking to sort of tell the story of? Because I very much think you achieve it between, you know, yourself as director, Eric from Norway. I think there is, you know, there is that huge variation.
Thank you. Yes, definitely. What we wanted to do, both of us talked about this quite a bit, was we feel like there's a kind of general stereotype of a Geordie, Geordie fans. And it's that heavy set man with the tattoos running out, beer guzzling, crazy.
Moves on view with big crests of the badge on.
And that's just how, I'm sure it happens with Liverpool as well, and to a lesser extent. But I always felt, and from being an outsider coming from another country and seeing it, and the people that I met and the sense of humor of this region. And I just thought, like, that's just so unfair for people to be looking at Geordies in that way. In fact, in people that follow Newcastle United, I wouldn't call like Eric, it's not a Geordie, but they call them adopted Geordies in a sense. Mm. But what we try to do is have the people that we follow be everyday people from all over in different parts and not just be that stereotype. So we have a doctor, we have a school teacher, we have a window cleaner, we have a guy who owns his own business, we have a Muslim female whose mother doesn't know she goes to the matches.
Although she probably does now.
She does now after this film. but I think that was the main impetus in this. We did not want to have that kind of like what everybody who doesn't know the region thinks of as Newcastle United fans.
So within there, you obviously speak to a few other people. George Culkin, always seems a lovely man. Shearer, Ferdinand. But the main fella, Zara, is indeed Rafa Benitez. You say you got him within 2 months. How was it to get him? And how much do you think, again, this film, I certainly think it does, you know, reflect what Benitez does to a football supporter? I think he's a strange figure in that for a slightly ultimately geekish Spaniard who's football obsessed to the most minute detail, he inspires the most intense devotion.
Oh, I'm totally on the Rafa band. If you could see there, there's like a big picture. There's a big picture of Keegan, and then there's a picture of Rafa next to him, and the two stand side by side. No, Rafa's just fab, and like, yeah, I'm totally in love. He's just fab. I really miss him. He was a lovely man. He was very warm. He was very welcoming to us. And the first interview we did was on the back of the press conference for the Fulham game. Which was a nationally televised game. So it was like Sky cameras, all these big cameras, big TV crews, and then four of us, tiny little crew, little DSLR camera. And he first came, he's like, oh God, not another one. Then he realized it was us, the fans. He's like, oh, you're the fans. Yes. Blah, 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 anything you need. And just was lovely.
He did a little spot for us, didn't he?
Yeah, we were doing a Kickstarter at the time, which ultimately failed, but he actually did do a little plea to the cameras, plea to the fans, you know, this is your film. And we always wanted it to be it's the fans' film. Like, we wanted it to be like of the fans, by the fans, for the fans. That was really important to us to have buy-in, but ownership of the Newcastle United fan base as well. And Rafa helped with that a lot.
Neil, can I just add to that, which is really interesting. We got to interview him three times, once in the beginning, once in the middle, and once at the end. None of the footage from the end made the final cut. But what was really interesting, and I've heard other fans or people say this about Rafa, is that he was so busy on that day. I think he was in the middle of a transfer on the day that we interviewed him after the season. I think it was in end of May, and probably
May 16th.
So we went in there, he sat down with us, he gave us a time, answered the questions, and then cut, the camera goes off. He started talking to Zara for another half an hour.
Yes.
His handler said, he's got to go, he's busy, he's going to have to leave. And he didn't leave, he stayed there. And he went up to the board where he has all his little men on there. He showed us to explain what he was trying to do and this. He talked about his time in Real Madrid and the players and how that was working and the future of football, how it's being owned by the agents. And we have it on, because I left my camera running. So I have it on camera, but of course we wouldn't use that. But it was just amazing to see the guy, the enthusiasm is the word that comes out of him, his love for the game, his love for the fans. And he totally changed this region.
He changes regions. It's one of the things he does. Absolutely fabulous. Do watch it if you can. Do check it out. It's wearethegeordies.com to find things there around it. We Are The Geordies is the Newcastle United fan film. I'd recommend it to anyone. It is a fan film. It's not necessarily about where it's about. Although Rafa Benitez will always be Rafa Benitez wherever he goes. Thank you very much to James. Thank you very much to Zara.
Thank you for
you know where it is.
Cheers.
Thank you.
This is Andy Eaton, and I'm delighted to be joined for a quick chat by Michael Stokes, young Scouse musician, Liverpool fan. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show, Andy.
Oh, you're welcome. So just wanted to get you in for a little chat because I was sent a video by a good friend of mine of your sing your song Another Life, and I'm just blown away, and it's kind of like I wanted to get you in and just have a little chat about, because obviously a young lad just starting out, but just the latest in another and a seemingly long line now with Scouse musicians making the breakthrough, Jamie Webster, for example, Key Molyneux and all that stuff. I mean, it must be a whirlwind, though. It must be a great experience for you.
Yeah, the city, it's full of boss talent at the minute. I know Jamie, and I know Key as well, actually, to be honest. The talent in Liverpool at the minute is just ridiculous. It's mad. It's just, I'm blown away with it at the minute.
Can you feel that surge in like creativity? Because I always find it funny that it seems to come and go in waves in Liverpool, and it just seems to be like a constant flood at the minute. Or do you feel like when you look at the likes of Jamie and Keogh and that, you're thinking, yeah, go ahead? I mean, was that encouraging to see how well they've done over the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, it was boss. Just to see people from our city just grow, you know, as a musician, because as you said, there was hardly an happening for quite a while. Do you know what I mean? So there is a bit of a flood at the minute, and it's good to see, you know, especially being from the city, Liverpool, you know. So it is good, isn't it?
Talk to me about the track. I mean, I've listened to it. For those that haven't, we'll put the links up. And I mean, the best place is probably YouTube, isn't it, to have a listen to it?
Yeah, YouTube or Instagram.
Where did it come from? I mean, you've written the song yourself and put it all together. I mean, I can just tell me the genesis of it all.
Basically, it's about like moving away from a place where you don't want to be, do you know what I mean? So it's like, I can relate to it in a few different ways. I've wrote it for that reason, do you know what I mean? It's it means a lot to me because obviously I've moved out of Liverpool as well at the minute. So it's just one of them. It's just it just came together as I was writing it, you know. It's just, yeah.
Do you get the sense that, I mean, you talk about like the music scene in Liverpool now. Do you think in part it's been driven by, because I always go back to, I mean, fucking years before you were born, but it seems that Liverpool tends to react to adversity in a creative manner, like all the way through the 80s and the 90s and stuff like that, and obviously what's going on currently with the current situation with COVID and one thing and the other and just a general mad few years. Do you feel like, you know, you've got something to say? Because you said that yourself, the stories were told, it's about something. Do you feel that that's got anything to do? Do you feel like, not, I wouldn't say inspired, but you can get like a thread of what's going on and use that in a positive way?
Yeah, it definitely inspires me. The likes of Jamie and that, the way they're doing it at the minute, I just love what they're doing, especially with the relation of Liverpool Football Club. I'm a big supporter of the Reds myself, you know, so it's just boss to just see people just using what's happening at the minute and just going forward with it.
I mean, you talk about Jamie, let's talk about Michael Stokes. I mean, what kind of, I hate the word inspire because it's just too blue sky thinking, I hate all that bullshit. But like, when did it was just like you woke up one morning and go, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, you obviously have an interest in music, we've all got an interest in music, but when did that moment come where you went, right, no, this is what I'm going to do?
I used to always keep it in the dark. I never used to want to tell anyone what I wanted to do back in the day. So it got to the point where I was just showing my mates slowly and slowly and slowly, and they started enjoying what I was doing. So it made me, like, that gave me a little snap in my head to say, like, no, I need to carry on doing this, I really want this. And then as I started gigging, that's when it made me want it the most, you know. Obviously, feedback and stuff like that from gigs and whatever, especially the feedback off Instagram and stuff like that I've been getting lately, it's just good to hear, you know, it's boss.
How do you find that, getting on stage? Because we're sat here now and you come across like a quiet shy kid, but I've listened to the video, and there's so much energy in it. I mean, is it like crossing the white line if you're on a footy pitch? It's a completely different animal when you just...
Yeah, you know, I'd say it's probably the same thing. As soon as I get on that stage, it's just one of them. It's just, I just feel like, I don't know, everything goes out the window. It's just concentrated on that, and I'm just in the zone and just forget about everything else, you know.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, your backstory, where you're from. You're obviously from Liverpool.
Yeah.
You know, and what kind of, what's led you to where you are now?
Well, I'm from Everton. So a place called Langey on Everton. I grew up there, and I ended up staying there till I was about 18, and then my mum moved out, well, up to Warrington. So from there, I ended up staying in Liverpool for 2 years or whatever. And I think just that time through the 2 years of maybe coming away from Liverpool, maybe realised that I needed to be in Liverpool, do you know what I mean? Like, being away from it made me realise that I needed to be there with the people, obviously, I've met from Liverpool, whatever, and also, like, just, it's just given me an experience of being away from it, you know?
And from that, I mean, to go back to the music a little bit, you record in the studio with them, I mean, that must be mad.
It's blown me away. I just didn't think I'd end up being at this stage from where it started, you know, it's mad.
You enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm loving it. Boss, it's just doing what I'm doing, like I love doing for a living, you know.
I mean, it's good. What's it like first time walking into a bit like a proper recording studio and going, fuck now?
It's mad. It just feels like I'm in a film or something, you know. It just feels, it doesn't feel like natural. It's mad.
And then there's stuff going on. I've seen little snippets of videos you've been shooting in the cavern and stuff like that.
Yeah, the cavern was a brilliant experience. That was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life.
Do you feel like the weight of it? Because it's such a name, like you say, the cavern to anyone in the world, never mind people who are interested, you know, in the Liverpool music scene, they know instantly where it is. How did that feel, like just going there to work effectively?
it was mad. It was just crazy. Just even getting told I had the gig, I was just like, I just didn't know what to do. I was so blown away, you know. It was mad. And then obviously getting to the point of doing the gig, we'd done the gig at 8:30 in the morning, so it was a bit of a it was a hard one for the vocals in the morning.
Like shooting a Christmas special in July or something.
Yeah, it is. It's mad. It was a hard experience, but it was good, and I enjoyed myself, and I'm happy I've done it. You know.
Great. So what's next? What's next for yourself?
I should have a single coming out soon. I'm not going to give any specific dates or anything, but it should be towards January times, so around January.
And you've had some big names backing you up, some admirers. I mean, one in particular, famous one from across the pond, Elvis Costello, was it? I mean, what does it feel like to be someone like someone who's world-renowned?
Well,
that's
another thing. I've been blown away by it. You just don't expect anything like that to happen, especially from Elvis Costello, who's one of the biggest rock stars on the planet. You know, it's just crazy. It's just mad that it when he shared that, I was speechless. It took me a few hours to reply. It was mad. But, just hearing feedback on someone like that, it just makes me want to push harder, you know. It's just giving me that drive.
Brilliant. So one more time, before we go, another life, give us the details. Where's best to listen to? Where to get it?
I go to YouTube, because then it'll flow into obviously the other songs I've got on there and stuff like that. But I also have Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Yeah, so any of them socials would be great for it to go to.
There you go. So get on it, Michael Stokes, Another Life. Thanks for coming in for the show, Michael, and best of luck.
Thanks, Andy. Thank you.
Thanks a lot to Neil and Andy for that. Just before we talk about Fulham, there's a few things I want to talk about. First of all, I'm in strict instructions on the creator, sell, 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 because it's Christmas. And so tour gift subscriptions are available. You can buy them in 3, 6, or 12 months. So if some auntie or uncle has said, yeah, I don't know what to buy yet, and you don't yet subscribe, 3, 6, or 12 month subscriptions are available on our shop. It's theamphirap.com/shop. We'll take you there, obviously, links on the site as well. Or if you want to buy one for someone else, I'm sure they'd appreciate it too. So it's really easy to buy. We set them up, we send you out a nice little e-card that Sam Walker Dan has designed, and then you are absolutely ready to go. So do have a little think about that as we approach Christmas or birthdays. We'll take your money any time of year, to be honest with you. But there you are. And now to talk about something slightly more wholesome than me trying to sell everything we have. I want to talk to Paul about your last week or so, because there's been the now annual campaign around Rainbow Laces, Paul, that is run by Stonewall. That seems to grow and grow each year, both in terms of the people getting involved. I don't know, I think it was 5 million laces sent out this time, which was great. But also, it seems to have increased how the football clubs are backing it as well. And obviously, Emily will come on to talk about Jordan Henderson. But, you know, in terms of what the football clubs seem to be doing, and Liverpool in particular, it seems to be more and more each year to me. Would you agree with that?
I think, weirdly enough, it felt like a lot less at the beginning of Rainbow Laces. It was a smaller mention in the programme and I wasn't sure where it was going. And then, actually, the club did do a fair bit on social media, copped for the usual idiots jumping in with nonsense. And then Jordan Henderson responds to a fan's tweet with just classic Jordan Henderson, to be honest. Straight down the line, look, I'm made up for you. Great that you can feel that you can play football again because of me wearing some laces. And it's just absolutely what Rainbow Laces is about. It's not about trying to push an LGBT plus agenda. It's actually about trying to push the ability of football to enable people to take part as spectators, as fans, as players, up and down the country, and to have real leadership being shown by people who you can't do anything other than respect. That is absolute class. And the hilarious thing that happened on Twitter was surely the haters immediately posting the picture of Vardy sliding into a corner post with a rainbow flag on it as proof positive that footballers hate the Rainbow Laces campaign. And then Vardy sticks two fingers up at that by signing it and dedicating that flag to Proud Foxes, which is the Leicester LGBT plus fan group. And to have that riposte, excuse the pun, is just perfect, because it really sticks it to the haters in a way that they've just got nowhere to turn except their own ignorance. And, you know, to have players standing up and being counted as allies is absolute class. And it's the sort of thing that makes people go, you know what, there is no point in being a hydrophobic idiot. And in fact, there's no point in being a bystander. Let's stick with people and enable people to enjoy the game. And it's allyship that has really been the thing that's changed things for me as a fan and for loads of other LGBT plus fans. They know now that they can go to Anfield with a much greater sense that they're going to be okay. Because if the one idiot does start on them, there'll be a dozen people turning around and say, do you mind? Knock it on the head.
Yeah, and I thought Jordan just got the tone of it all really, really spot on, Paul, and that's sort of what pressed me most, just as much as the fact that he was sort of speaking out and he did sort of reach out to that fan. And I know he made some sort of, you know, comment afterwards where he said, you know, if someone in my family was part of the community and they didn't feel like they could come and watch me play, it'd be heartbreaking. And that is the point of all this, isn't it? Is that football should be for everyone. And if it's truly going to call itself the national game, and if we're truly going to say that, you know, once you're part of a family and things like that, that does have to include every kind of aspect of the society. And to praise Everton, which is something I will very rarely do, and I promise I won't do again in this show, I really liked the comeback today. I think it was on Instagram where you know, one of these idiots, as you say, you know, says, I don't want to see this, you know, I'm going to unfollow. And the Everton Instagram account said, you know, we're the people's club, and that means all people. And I thought that was, you know, a really nice turn of phrase, and will hopefully make people think is that you don't get to decide yourself that football is only part of you know, it's only there for certain parts of society. It is for everyone. It is truly our national game, and everyone should feel welcome.
Absolutely. I mean, Everton did stuff like that. I think West Ham have. You know, some of the social media accounts have really stepped up their game in terms of not wading in and commenting on every hater, because I think some of the trolls actually want a bit of that. But jumping back now and again and just slam dunking the idiots. And that is just priceless, because it gives good fans something to enjoy and laugh about. It raises the profile of the whole issue. But it also tells LGBT plus fans that this isn't just a gimmick that allows the haters and the trolls to come out the closet and give a load of grief to people. This is something more meaningful that enables clubs to show where their position is and to take action. Myself and lots of other people on the weekend did use it as an opportunity to report idiots on social media to the owners of those social media platforms, because they're behaving in a way that shouldn't. There's no place for it in football. There's also no place for it on social media. We don't have to live in a world full of nonsense. And if we can get more people who show that they're allies, show that they want to make football a more welcoming place, then that's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll move on to Fulham and Liverpool's next Premier League game. And Mike, as a man who also likes to slam dunk the idiots, it's a real opportunity for Liverpool, isn't it? This weekend, Fulham do look one of the weaker sides in the Premier League. You know, you need to take it seriously, and they'll have 2,000 fans there, and we saw how that helped us. But at the same time, you know, I mean, the other teams who are around us are looking at the fixtures this weekend and thinking, oh, they've got Fulham, you know what I mean? And it is that sort of fixture for us, isn't it? It's a real good opportunity while the league is tight to get 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, it's you could have, if you're going to handpick a team to play who have got to 2,000 fans back down in the relegation zone, you'd probably pick Fulham at the moment. And that's no disrespect to any Fulham fan listening, but it feels comfortable to go to Fulham and win. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we sort of battled to a bit of a 2-1 win there. One of the very rare Van Dijk and Alisson Becker mistakes that you can point to. They only really happen once in a blue moon. So it's good to know, even if they do put a good performance in, you know, we're still likely to battle through and win. And, you know, it's going to be hard. They will try and their best to set out and try and get some some sort of results, but you watched them against Man City the other day and it sort of felt as soon as the first goal went in, well, their plan was out the window and they now need to go and put themselves on the game a bit more than what they were planning to try and get something. I know that was different because they were away and they didn't have the 2,000 fans behind them and stuff, but I think Fulham will as tight as it is down there at the minute, really, in that little sort of weird third of the table that's not really mid-table, just like basically 16th, 17th downwards, really. Their main thing for this weekend, if you're a Fulham player, or Scott Parker, really, is let's not have another five in the against Colomier. Let's just have a one or two if we can. And, you know, that I was saying before, you don't really ever want to go into a game wanting to get beat, but if you're in that sort of situation, where it can be so tight down there, they'll just want to get out of it with as little damage as possible if they are going to go and lose. And, you know, they will have a game plan to try and make it tight, and you know, maybe as long as the game goes on at 0-0, they'll feel that they might be able to get something out of it. But I mean, for us, we've just got to turn up and be at our best. And, you know, there's no chance that these players we've got will ever turn up to a game and think that half their best or any percentage less than 100 is not required. You know, we've seen this last season. We win the league and we're 3-0 up against Crystal Palace and it's pretty much rubber stamping. We're going to win the league and Sadio Mane's chasing someone down into the corner flag, 80 minutes gone. And it's, you know, it didn't need to, you know, didn't really have to, but did it because, you know, these players always want to win, always want to score goals and, you know, impress the manager, really. And it should be a comfortable win. It should just be a win and we can manage the game because, you know, we've got at some point, hopefully we'll be maybe a goal or two up and we'll then think, right, we'll see this out now, just be as professional as we can because we've got a busy period coming in now. So if we can get games won as quick as possible and just professionally manage them out, then I think that's what you'll see from us this weekend, hopefully.
Yeah, there should be a freshness about us as well, Philippa, for a few of the guys don't have to play at least four games, you know, in the week. Only Mo Salah obviously ends up doing sort of the 100 minutes. But that should help us out as well. There's a couple of, obviously, of our players here only getting sort of 10, 15 minutes towards the end. There's a nice, you know, space off for Joel Matip completely. And you feel like Liverpool, even with our injuries and with a few that aren't quite ready to come back here, should be able to put a really good team out against Fulham.
Yeah, I mean, I totally expect the likes of Genie to come back in. Curtis Jones, I expect to start again. I think he's been excellent the last few games. I just think that there's enough freshness there for us to be able to maybe get the game closed off by the 60th minute, and then you can maybe look to kind of reserve that energy as Mike was kind of hinting at there. You know, we've got a really big game against Spurs midweek, so I don't think we would necessarily want to be going into the 80th minute needing to be scoring goals and putting all our efforts into the game. So I expect us to try and get it won fairly early on, and then, like Mike says, be professional and just see out the game as best as we can. I wouldn't be surprised, though, to see someone like Nico Williams start again at the weekend. I think, you know, it was interesting that he didn't start last night. I totally understand that, you know, Trent needed some minutes after being out injured, but I don't think you necessarily then want Trent to then play three or four games, you know, on the bounce. And this is where I think he might hold him back for Spurs. I think it's one of those that if he had the option of the five substitutes, as we were discussing earlier on, that he might be somebody who he'd play for 60 minutes and then bring him off. You know, to save him for the Spurs game after 60 minutes. But I think to ask him to play like 90 minutes of tough football, you know, within a week, is quite difficult to do when you've been out with an injury as well. So I really wouldn't be surprised to see Nico Williams play. But I do expect the likes of Matip, Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Henderson all start the game. And I think Salah will play again. You know, there's a bit of a question mark there because he played the 100 minutes last night. But then I think that he's the sort of player, like I said before, who, you know, who can, you know, reserve his energy in the right places. But I think Firmino and Mane will start as well. And I expect that team to have more than enough for a Fulham side who defensively, for me, have looked decidedly shaky this season. You know, and I think if you can get early couple of goals in that game, I think, you know, they'll lose their confidence and the heart out of the game. And hopefully, like Mike said, it should be a fairly comfortable win for us then.
So you're leaving Jota out then? I've just done some sums. I've done a formation.
Go on. I personally wouldn't start Jota. I just feel like the last couple of games is I don't know whether or not he's just played quite a bit and he's kind of like rode that crest of a wave sort of thing, and whether or not I'd just have him on the bench to come on and you know, do the last 30 minutes, take one of the other forwards off after 60. I think that's probably the way I would go with it. But I just felt he got kicked quite a bit last night. Maybe that's clouding my judgment. But yeah, that's probably what I would do.
What would you do, Paul?
I really like Jota. I think he's a class player. He was kicked around the park a bit last night. And he maybe shouldn't be going for a full 90 minutes for sure, but I would like to see him play again. I want to keep him match fit and match ready, and that only comes with game time really. So yes, I would have him play, but bring him on after 60 minutes. Equally, I look at a team like Fulham and I just hate the complacency that we can go into some of these games with, and it reminds me of 4 or 5 years ago when we went through an absolute period of thrashing top teams and then turning out the next week as if, oh, it's just a Sunday league team, we don't have to bother, and then dropping points. And it's not acceptable. We've got to stay focused and show every team a decent degree of respect. And if that means that we then wallop a team 4-0 and beat them properly, then let's go out and do that.
They will do though, won't they, Mike, in terms of the players? I mean, we've been a little bit complacent here, so I feel like Paul's telling me off personally as the host of this show, but which I'm fine with, by the way. Do you know what I mean? Reminds me of home. But the players themselves, you know, they always tend to show the right attitude, don't they? And even for the point of view of, like a couple of you have said, wanted to get it done as early as possible, you fancy enough they'll be at it. They'll just be made up, they're not playing in the morning.
Yeah, I sort of touched on it before, like that, you know, it's fine for us to have these sort of complacency feelings maybe, but you know, we're not the ones thankfully running around the pitch. The players are always, I mean, the only time I think I've seen them be slightly complacent and I'm absolutely fine to let them off with it is the 4-0 at City last year, where, you know, I think we were all still on the ale. you know, I think that might have just crept into the performance slightly a little bit. But even then, that night, you know, we didn't turn up and completely stink the place out at the post. Had a few chances, so you know, these players absolutely professional to the last breath on a football pitch, and you know, to the absolute last whistle, they will, you know, no chance they'll let standards drop. And you know, the best thing about the fans not being there is you've been able to hear the players talking to each other, and you know, the Henderson's always dragging everyone up and making sure he's talking, being loud. So doesn't I mean, look, there's nowhere to hide. Even with 2,000 fans, you'll still be able to hear everyone. And there's never been a place to hide for a Liverpool player. You know, Klopp's always not happy. Your teammates will dig you out. And there was a game a couple of seasons ago, I can't remember what it was, but Van Dijk was going off as Barney at Trent, and he only wants them to move forward 2 yards. But the way he was shouting at him, you'd think he'd done something else. Like it was just move forward 2 yards. It was. I mean, I was in the at the game with Arsenal, and we'd seen it. And we were just laughing. Like it looked like he was having a proper go, but he just wanted them to get up. And you know, there's no complacency creeping in the players, I don't think. And you know, we can sort of say the week, the Brighton game, we tried to manage that out, and I know the penalty comes in the end, and it's something that maybe wouldn't have happened. You know, pre-VAR or even like a lot of the talk around the penalty wasn't it, and lots of debate and subjectivity about it, and we nearly saw that out 1-0, and it's not a lack of professionalism or nothing really, it was just a decision that went against us. And you know, you don't need to tell these players when they've made mistakes, they sort of self-police themselves, they're self-policing them, each other, and the, you know, there's absolutely no chance. I think we'll be the players will be up for it. Once we're 2 or 3 nil up, I'll be thinking more about Spurs, but thank God I'm not playing centre half.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we're all positive. I won't ask you for a score prediction because I think we're all fairly positive that Liverpool will do the business, and we'll see if anyone else will drop a few points over the weekend, and hopefully Liverpool might finish the weekend sitting pretty at the top of the Premier League. Who knows? But I'm sure you'll enjoy the weekend nonetheless. Loads more content, obviously, from the Anfield Wrap in terms of our subscription stuff. Team talk tomorrow will be straight after the press conference. Then, obviously, on the day of the match itself, loads of great content, both looking forward to the game and also hopefully straight after a really nice win. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to Mike, to Paul and to Philippa and for you guys for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks very much. Sports Social Podcast Network.